Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support. Synchronize our watches.
Starting in 3, 2, 1.
This message will self-destruct in 10 seconds. Commander decks are out. Vintage, we got Vintage Masters is out. Magic will self-destruct in 10 seconds.
Best intro ever.
What they about are the
finally reprinting power?
Kind of.
Without the somewhere it can't hurt anybody.
Yeah, yeah. Closest we're gonna come. But I mean it's super good for the survival of vintage community.
Yeah, this is the only way that it would ever survive. Too bad is the new art.
Alright, so explain to us for people listening, what are we actually talking about right now?
So Vintage Masters, shout out to Maddie Studios, because he's been talking about this for like the past 6 months or so. And he actually called it. But this is going to be like Modern Masters, but only vintage cards. Power 9 is coming back. But because of the reserve list, there's no way they could do this in actual paper form. So it's going to be a Modo-only product. And it's still going to be the exuberant price of $7 a pack for this, and you're going to be opening solid gold. Or we'll have to find out, because we really don't know what the prices will be for these Power 9 that will be in the packs. And we could also expect some other good cards that are going to probably fill the legacy need, and there'll be some modern need as well. Question being is, number of cards, but the Power 9, the biggest thing about the Power 9 is actually, from what I understand and what I read and the tweets and people explained to me, Card Nexus, is this is a new mythic rare that in every pack of Modern Masters, there were foil cards. And that was a known factor. Well, now in the Vintage Masters, there's going to be a foil card or a power.
Oh my god.
And I'm under the impression also that you only can get the Power 9 in this slot here. So it's going to create this ultra rarity that's going to be a mythic. So not happy about that. So what do you guys think? Chime in on this.
I mean, I think it makes the power still feel like power and not just a common. But, yeah, I mean, I understand the frustration. Like, I really want to play Vintage, but I think the threshold, at least to begin with, is going to be too high for me to want to get in on Modo. So, I don't know. It depends on how many people are busting these packs and how many people are excited enough about the limited format to open enough packs for there to be enough power out there. Like, if they make the limited events really bad and nobody wants to play in them, then I think the price of it would be really, really ridiculous, and nobody's going to want to play the Constructed either just because of the threshold to buy in. So, I mean, I'm hoping they make the price support good enough for Limited to really fill those events up.
I don't play Modo, so it doesn't affect me, but it's cool that there's power, I guess. Wouldn't it be weird if, like, there's just a bunch of this open, because I'm sure it'll be really popular, and then you can get, like, you know, one-tick Moxes?
I don't think it'll ever be that cheap. Like, that's unrealistic. Yeah, I mean, I could see 20 tick Moxes.
Do you think if they have those at like this mythic slot or whatever, do you think like dual lands, for instance, maybe like rare and that there'll be a bunch of those, or? Cause this seems like this will be directed, you know, vintage obviously, but it will impact legacy more since there's a lot more legacy played on Modo than vintage.
I thought there was going to be either a cycle of dual lands or it's going to be a cycle of fetches, but honestly, if they're going to do fetches, that's something that they need in modern, and that's something they would want to do in paper form as well, where the dual lands is something they can't print. So dual lands and Vintage Masters just seems like an obvious fit, because that just coincides with everything else that's going on. And also there's, when you do vintage, there's going to be an increase in demand for the dual lands themselves. So this will help, you know, stymie the market and won't let things get out of control, because we've already seen dual lands starting to go back to the prices that they were before they had a Masters Edition 4. So.
Be an interesting thing.
I mean, the real thing is, do you think there's going to be enough people who don't know anything about Vintage now, who are willing to get into the format if it becomes accessible enough.
I mean, there's going to be people who have cards that are trapped in it, I'm sure, so.
Yeah, but I mean, this is, unlike Modern, is not something that a lot of people, you know, remember playing with and stuff like that. Like, right. I feel like a lot of these people are going to be just coming into Vintage for their first time and seeing all these cards for the first time, so they may not be as excited about playing the format.
That's very true. I think so, because I mean, yeah, Vintage, like, even me, because I know these cards and I grew up and they were really cool to me. And these are like, you know, iconic. I don't even know anything about Vintage. And from what I hear about it, there's, it could be this combo heavy and just heavy blue, and it's not as fun as people may put it out to be. So it could turn off a lot of new players, because the skill level in order to be good in Vintage is insane.
I mean, even on Moto, I'm sure it'll be expensive.
Yeah. So speaking of new things coming out, what do we think about these Commander decks?
Merfolk.
Yes.
So obviously Corbin is referring to the true name Nemesis. Do you guys know what a Nemesis is?
It's a Merfolk.
It is a righteous infliction of retribution manifested by an appropriate agent, personified in this case by a 3-1 protection from players.
That's a Merfolk.
That is a Merfolk. So this guy cannot be blocked by your opponent's creatures, targeted by your opponent's spells, enchanted by your opponent's stuff. This Merfolk has protection from them and lives to hit them in the face repeatedly. And he gets pumped by all the Merfolk lords. What do we think of this guy?
I'm so excited, if you couldn't guess.
You don't sound excited.
All right, I'll tell you why. I'll keep this short. In Legacy, one of the, like, Merfolk's good matchups, they're typically like the combo matchups are pretty good. And then Delver can kind of go either way. Like, kind of the attrition-based decks are the ones that give problems, like John, for instance. Those decks that kind of can grind them out, and they'll just, you know, eventually kill all your creatures and whatnot. Those are kind of the things that give you problems. So, like, this is the perfect card to just keep it coming. Like, even if they deal with most of your stuff, this thing is just going to kill them. Like, if you get however many points of damage you get out of the rest of your cards, you know, finding room for, like, two of these in your deck, you cast one of them in a game, like, all of a sudden they're on this 2 or possibly 3 turn clock that they just absolutely can't deal with. Like, a deck like Jund, if I understand exactly how the card works, like, literally can't interact with it. So the turn it comes down, it's going to block something, like, and that holds them back because it's a free block. And then you just get this clock on them that they absolutely cannot stop.
Jund's got Liliana, so you got to play around that.
Sure. I mean, like, yeah. I mean, that's like their only out, right? And you have, I mean, that's a pretty difficult for them to work
towards. The problem is it doesn't, like, improve your worst matchup, which I think was Supreme Verdict X.
Yeah, I mean,
like, there's not a ton of those, though, like.
There's enough, though. That's, like, that's what keeps Merfolk down.
Yeah, but, like, so does Jun. Like, it's kind of the same in Modern, that just those decks that can both kill you, all of your dudes, and put that clock on you, are the ones you have trouble with. So, like, the control decks, like, yeah, it doesn't help against Verdict or whatever, but, like, if they Verdict your initial wave of creatures, it's a pretty good follow-up because they can't Swords it.
I mean, that's fair. Honestly, I think I can't wait for this card just to crush Corbin's spirits and not actually see any play in Merfolk, but be adapted at least in the sideboard of, like, bug decks alongside of Nimble Mongoose.
It does have utility outside of Merfolk decks. That's what I think a lot of people are excited about.
Like, I mean, I like it almost over Goyf in some of those lists. Like, Goyf on 2 is obviously important, but this guy, I mean, it's just another untargetable threat for you.
Well, it's like, the question is there the deck that runs, like, this and Geist of St. Trapped, or does this replace Geist of St. Trapped, or is Geist of St. Trapped better? Like, that's kind of the comparison, I think.
I mean, I suppose I'm talking about decks that can't run Geist itself, but, I mean, I honestly, when I saw this card, all I could think of was, this is what Bug wants.
Yeah. I mean, it's
not
certainly
main deck, but I think this is what Bug wants. Like, the matchups where your Goyfs are bad, this is good.
Speaking of Bug, real fast, the Commander decks are also seeing a reprint of Baleful Strix. So we should see some price divergence away from Baleful Strix, away from Shardless Agent. Yes. They're pretty much neck and neck right now, but I think the Strix is going to go down with the increased supply.
It's actually, the Strix is in 2 decks, isn't it? 2 Commander decks?
I'm
fairly confident it's in 2 of them. Because it was like the first one I saw, I was like, oh, a reprint, as I was going through the list. And the second one was like, yep, I guess they want more of these out there because they know it's the $20 card that's hard to find.
Which is, you know, it'll be good for Shardless Agent, I guess. They'll probably find another way to reprint Shardless Agent if they're doing this. Because the Cascade makes it a little tougher to just jam that in whatever, but they could do like a judge non-foil. I don't know. Maybe they'll do a judge foil. Who knows?
So why, I guess we're on the subject. What do you guys think? Do you think that these secondary, like when they made the secondary products, it made sense. They said they're available in eternal formats because modern didn't exist at the time when they started this. Like, but modern is technically an eternal format. Obviously these aren't legal in modern, but do you think in the future they will make these illegal in modern?
You almost said retcon, didn't you?
I think what they will do is the ones that currently exist, leave those where they are, but then anything that comes out from a certain point forward will be legal.
Isn't that even too messy? That's too messy. That's
more confusing.
Yeah.
It's either all or nothing to me, but it just doesn't make sense necessarily for it to be nothing when their whole, like, I don't know, because they literally, when these come out, they said they're going to be in eternal formats, and then they come out, well, modern is eternal format. I don't know, though, like, Baleful Shrieks and True Name Nemesis may just actually be kind of busted in modern. I don't know, but I would kind of think that they would be.
It gives also Legacy a different way to be identifiable. Like, otherwise, modern looks very similar to Legacy, and is, you need to have a different way of differentiation.
Yeah, that's fair. But it's like, I saw that True Name Nemesis, and I was like, oh my god, I just want to play this in modern, but I can't. But I just thought it was interesting. Is it maybe something down the road that they'll consider?
I think there's a possibility of it. I don't think it's completely not possible, but I think if they haven't done it by now, then they're probably not going to go that direction. Like, now would be the time to do it. And if they're not going to do it now, I just, you know.
Yeah. Okay. So this week we have a bunch of emails and we're going to talk about them like we've been saying we're going to do for months. So for everyone who's been like diligently sending us emails, we're going to get to some of them this week. Cheers all around.
Not all of them either.
For people that have been diligently sending us emails, there is a small chance that we won't read everyone but yours.
The odds are very high in that direction.
So we also have asked you to send us trades to evaluate, and I think we're going to get to a few of those tonight.
Yeah. All right. Well, do we want to start with some trades? I've got these pulled up if we want to.
Yeah, let's do a trade that was actually sent to me via Reddit.
All right.
Do that first. So DanDan85, I don't know that it's his real name. That's probably some sort of Reddit pseudonym. One of his friends wants to trade him a foil Tarmogoyf and a non-foil Goyf, both modern masters, for his playset of Future Sight Goyfs. He says he has an extra playset of Future Sight Goyfs, which must be nice, so he doesn't need the four of them, but he says he doesn't really need a foil Goyf. He's not really going to pimp out his cube. He doesn't really want to play it in EDH, because why would you do that? So it would basically just to get a foil Goyf, he wants to know which side of the trade we want to be on. So he kind of jotted down some numbers here, and it's looking like, based on eBay prices, the Future Sight Goyfs are like $1.25 on eBay, so it's about $500 for the set. And the foil Modern Masters is about $320, so it's about $420 versus $500 in favor of the Future Sight playset. So what do you guys think? Is this super obvious to you?
The way I look at it is this. The foil Goyf would have to have a huge spike to make up for four small spikes from the other ones. And at the same time, I think you're also going to have a much tougher time unloading that foil one than you are the regular ones. And if there's any scratches or dings or anything at all in that foil one, you might as well cut the value by 25%. I would much rather hold on to the non-foil versions, because if there's a little ding in your non-foil, it's not losing 25% of its value.
And right. I think there's something to be said for having a playset.
Yeah, like, just having that too.
A playset will trade out so well. Like, and that guy wants the foil Goyf, but every guy that's going to get into Modern or Legacy will want to pick those up four at a time if they don't have any.
Yeah, like, the only way I see wanting the foil Goyf is if, I mean, like you said, he's got an extra set. So if all he cares about is, on the one hand, he's got his to play with, right? And right now he just had these extras that may or may not do him anything. And I think we can agree they'd be better to have to trade out or whatever. I mean, maybe he just wants a chance to trade up and have a pimp, you know, foil Goyf. Like, that's the only argument I can see for that. And
but I think you could.
It's not trading up though.
Yeah, you're trading down.
The current valuation is trading down.
Yeah, you're trading down in terms of cash. I mean, you do walk away with the single most valuable card out of the trade. Like, I say, his personal goal is to have this pimp card that he's going to put in his collection and enjoy having his collection. That's the only argument I can see for it.
And there's a possibility that, you know, foil Goyf would be like a foil Jace type of levels. Like, this is going to be on that rare level. So, you know, there's a chance that it can really get high, depending possibly. But I just think, you know, the new Goyf is just so ugly in comparison. Like, you know, there's in the long term, I don't see it really being as well. And having the playset is definitely better. I would not trade the playset away.
Especially if you take into account the fact that we assume, you know, air quotes around assume here, that there's going to be Modern Masters 2. And considering Goyf is still $100, it's probably going to get put in that too.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think they're going to... That it walks a dangerous line of becoming like other card games like Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon. And Magic has... They have expressed that they are able and willing to reprint things. However, I don't think they want to flood the market. That's not good for the market either.
They pre-printed it once, the price did not move.
They did not print Tarmogoyf to move the price. They printed Tarmogoyf to allow there to be a flux and let people get them who didn't currently have them.
They said they thought that the Modern Masters would move the price of modern staples by degrees, not by landslide margins. And the price
they did at first. Well, they did it first, and the people who wanted cheap Goyfs and were diligent got cheap Goyfs and have them, and now they went back up in value.
My point is, if they did that then, I don't think you're all of a sudden flooding the market and tanking cards and being like all these other games that ruined the secondary market because you print it again. Like,
no, regardless of whether or not it actually happens, you don't want to be that game. You lose a lot of faith from vendors, from players. I mean, it's already bad enough sometimes that, you know, people are like, oh, you reprinted my set of X, Y, or Z, you know. You can't be doing that every year. If Modern Masters comes out this coming year, you cannot have Tarmogoyf in it.
You could still have it. I don't think, because if they are trying to make it cheaper, then they might have to print Tarmogoyf again. Or I think that the direction they're going, they're just making Tarmogoyf not as good of a creature through the other mechanics that they're making more available.
I mean, that's fine too.
And I think, you know, eventually they're trying to nerf him being where he's at. So, but I think, you know, Modern Masters, because they're doing Vintage Masters next summer, which is going to come out next summer, that I see Modern Masters maybe 2 years from now, you know, the summer of 2015.
Yep.
And
because they design a year in advance. So if they saw how successful Modern Masters 1 was, they already had their summer 2014 product in the works, which means it would be summer 2015. Goyf could be $150 by then. I don't think a third printing in a limited quantity special run is going to freak out the market. But okay, so let's,
yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. Okay, so that's, I guess, where we all stand on that. So hopefully that helps. Jason, you have another one for us?
No, you said you got him pulled up, man.
Yeah, let's do it.
Don't say stuff like that if you're not going to follow through.
Here, I got one. Oh, this is a reply. Jason's an asshole.
I'm going to cut this out. I'm going to find one real quick.
Hey, Ezekiel. Sorry it took so long to get back to you. I was doing magical stuff all weekend. I'm not sure why anyone who buys a can of Surge online would want to drink them anyway, apart from Pepto-Bismol. A in the cans. You have a cancer risk of the sodium benzite being oxidized by ascorbic and carbonic acid and turning straight into the benzene. Fuck all that. Sodium.
Benzene.
Benzene, oh. Fuck that. Sodium benzoate?
Sodium benzoate is used as a preservative in citrus beverages like Sprite. Well, actually, I think most pops use sodium benzoate as a preservative, but it's really easy to cleave the sodium off, which turns it into straight benzene, which is a carcinogen. So you probably shouldn't use it as a preservative.
Wow, but, I thought you were reading this.
the thing with all these like the old Surge cans or whatever, it's funny because they're actually poisonous if you try to drink them because of that. Like,
yeah, an increased risk of bowel and stomach cancer.
You will get sick and possibly die. All right, I've got another trade sent into us here by Matthew Blumenfield. He says, I want your opinions on a trade I did in my last FNM. I traded two Blood Barons of Viscopa, they were 21, and one of Johnny Collar of the Pride, was at 4 or 5, for two Sphinx's Revelations, which were 25. He says, I personally feel like the Blood Baron will come back down in value pretty soon, while the Revelation will maintain $25 it's set at for a while. I'm interested in hearing your opinion. So what do you guys think?
Yeah, I think Revelation's got a longer term. It's going to stay throughout Standard. And Blood Baron is hot right now, but that could probably change in the next set.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't necessarily trade at the peak of Blood Baron at the time, but, like, it was close enough that giving up on a Johnny is, who cares? Like, That's one of those trades that, like, we could look back at that in, like, 2 months and we'll still probably feel like he was on the right side of it.
Yeah, I feel good about that trade for him because Johnny's whatever, like you said. And Blood Baron is – this is the, kind of the way I look at trades like this, okay? If we're talking about, like, long-term stability or, you know, medium terms, we're talking about in standard here. Blood Baron is very good because of the abilities it has. It goes into the decks. Like, it goes into these control decks and – in the right metagame, which is, you know, a common, like we have right now, this is, like, the abilities it have are good against most of the field. And that's probably going to be true. But it could not be true. Like, Obsidat, for instance, is sometimes better, depending on the metagame. Okay, so that's, Blood Baron, it's good, and I like it, and I think it's strong. Sphinx's Revelation, on the other hand, is the deck. It's the reason that the decks Blood Baron goes in exists. Like, it is that core card of those decks that isn't going away. And I think that's the argument for having Revelation instead of Blood Baron. Because, like, Blood Baron fills a role that can be replaced by something else if something else comes along. Sphinx's Revelation is the backbone of those decks, and I don't see it being replaced.
There's also the argument that Sphinx's Revelation does see eternal play, and therefore is more likely to hold long-term value.
That's true, too. And, but, I mean, Sphinx's Revelation right now, I think, is at 27 or 28. So,
I mean, I think even when it's out of standard, it will hold 15-plus probably always.
I wouldn't be surprised at that either. Like the, I mean, right now the control decks in Modern maybe run two of it. Sometimes it's only just one, but, like, it is a mythic and it seems crazy to think about it now, but in, like, 2 years, Return to Ravnica is going to be like, oh, that was a while back and this is a mythic and it's played in eternal formats. And all of a sudden, like you said, that $15-$20 won't seem as crazy as it seems now when Return to Ravnica is so recent.
Yeah, this seems like a slam dunk.
Okay, he also has one other question. I don't want to forget it here. He asks, how do we sell our cards? He started selling on eBay, but isn't sure if that's the best way to do it all that feels built into eBay and PayPal. So I guess I know you guys sell on TCG Player, and we all sell in real life. I mean, what is your advice to him, the best way to out his cards?
Some sort of close to retail out. Like, I do a lot of buy listing for the stuff where, you know, the margins are so slim, it's not worth listing. Like, the stuff will just sit there, whereas it'll snap sell on a buy list. But for the stuff that's, you know, worth more than $10, that's the kind of stuff you want to be selling at a close to retail market, whether that's MOTL, whether that's eBay or TCG Player. There are aspects of TCG Player I prefer to eBay, and there are aspects of eBay I prefer to TCG Player. So, you know, I don't want to advise one way or the other. It takes a lot longer to list on eBay. But I think I like the fee structure on eBay if you were set up as a store better. But if you're doing low volume, like, neither of those are great. So I would definitely look to be moving a lot of cards if I were going to go either of those routes. Like, right, so TCG Player is not really for hobbyists.
Well, yeah, I mean, TCG Player on its face has a lower fee structure than eBay for most cards, especially, like, cards over $10. It's not a lot, but it's a little cheaper. Although, like you said, if you're a store on eBay, it kind of... it changes it.
Just do Puka trade. Get the cards you want. Yeah.
Well, I can't, he's asking for advice. I can't advise Puka trade. No. Do you have any experience with it, Marcel?
No, I don't. I have not. But I've heard great things from people on Twitter, so. And thus, I have no experience with it, though. So that's the thing, you know, what you guys should do.
When I saw him with Jason, and then I do a lot of buy listing, but I also, you know, run a case at the LGS, and I sell some stuff through there. I don't really use TCG Player anymore, just because the stuff that I would sell on TCG Player, I just put in my store here in the cities. But, like, I think if you sell, you know, some cards or you want to sell a spec, that's TCG Player or eBay are pretty comparable, and both are good. The biggest difference is if you need to get rid of something soon, like if it's a spec that you think is going to top out and you need to get rid of it, put it on eBay because you set an auction, it's going to sell in a week. Whereas if you put it on a TCG Player, it could just sit there forever, you know, so.
I don't advise auctions. Auctions are a good way to, like, accidentally sell a $20 card for $3.
Yeah.
Like, I did buy it now only, and I wouldn't do it any different.
How did you price your buy it now? Did you get the completed auction?
Yeah, that's absolutely what I did. I just spent a little time researching completed auctions.
Okay.
So, I hope that doesn't sound like a non-answer.
I mean, I guess the aggregate answer is there's a lot of ways to do it, and you find what works for you. But all of those,
just go deep on it.
Yeah,
definitely.
Okay, guys, our next letter comes to us from Jeff Woods, and he has a trade to evaluate. He sent us a trade, And he said it's basically email, or basically even on TCG mid player, but he wants us to evaluate on levels other than just that. So the trade is 1 Jace the Mind Sculptor, 4, a lot of cards here, 3 Slaughter Games, 1 Detention Sphere, 1 Drone Catacomb, 1 Aethersworn Canonist, 2 Wrath of Gods, 1 Sorin, 1 Thalia, 2 different Wrath of Gods, 2 Foil Sun Titans, 2 Jace Memory Adepts, 1 Consecrated Sphinx, 2 Cryptic Command, 1 Isolated Chapel. So basically, it's, you know, 2 Cryptic Commands, which are expensive, and then a bunch of cards under $6 or $7. It's even in TCG mids. So what side of this trade would you guys like to take?
I think it very much depends on what you're looking to get out of the trade. I personally would like to be on the end of the lower end cards, I think, because I think I would move a lot of that stuff quicker and for better margins. If you look at TCG player, like, low for what I sell at, Jace is only about $80 to $90 after fees. And that's, I mean, not great, especially if you're, you know, taking all the time to go and purchase that and all this other stuff. And there's no guarantee it's going to sell tomorrow. A lot of this other stuff is EDH staples, stuff that I sell every day. And as valuable as Jace is, it also is a much bigger purchase than someone's buying, so it's less often going to be bought, I think.
So I think Jace is on his way down right now because of the FTV printings, and those other cards, a lot of them are stuff I'm looking at that I think is poised to go up.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting you guys say that, because, like, I would rather get the Jace. And the reason being, like, usually if you're making a trade that's even on, like, you know, mid values, if you're getting the largest card in the trade, you usually quote unquote win in terms of cash. So, like, I mean, that Jace is, you know, $80 or $90 after fees on TCG player if you sell it. If you just immediately turn around and sold all those other cards on TCG player, or, you know, if you buy list them, especially since I know a lot of my selling is to buy lists, the margins on those cards are going to be lower than something like a Jace.
I think you might be surprised at some of the buy list prices you're finding for Jace. And also, as a rule, if I'm trading up, I like to trade up at Star City prices, so all the $2 and $3 cards are going to be worth more. And if I'm trading down, I want to be trading down at TCG.
Correct.
So you want to be on the side of the trade that is getting rid of Jaces and trading right down into smaller cards. So I think you want the smaller pile of cards.
Hmm. I mean, the other way to look at this is, like, and I know this is, we talked about where, like, we kind of differ because, you know, like, Ryan outs all these small cards, doesn't do a ton of trading anymore. But, like, if I trade all those small cards into a Jace, I'm pretty happy with that. I'm going to take that Jace out there and I'm going to find somebody who wants a Jace and something else and is going to trade me a dual land, you know. Or if I crunch down the Jace, I'm going to get more than a quote unquote even value, because you can ask for a premium on a card like a Jace. So that, I think what's interesting is that there's not necessarily a right or wrong answer here. It just depends on how you plan on handling the cards on whatever side of the trade you're in.
That is a good point. If you wanted to do this trade and then do it again in reverse, so you take a small pile of cards that's worth a Jace, get the Jace, and then trade the Jace for a pile of cards that's worth more than a Jace, that's a good strategy.
But yeah, that's also on the assumption that you're going to find people that, A, want to buy Jaces, and I think the market value of them versus the retail value right now is very different, showing me that there's not as much interest out there for a Jace.
Right.
So, I mean, you can always move it, but it might be harder to get a premium on, per se.
Right. Okay, so let's move on to the next one here. Next one comes to us from Steve Chase. He says, a Force of Will for a Modern Masters Dark Confidant.
I think you'd rather have the Force of Will. That seems fairly obvious to me. I realize that Dark Confidant gets, you know, played in Modern. It's pretty hot right now, and the reprinting in Modern Masters didn't really do anything to affect the price of it, but I don't know. A Force of Will is a Force of Will.
Ryan, what's your take on this? I know you have an opinion on Force of Will.
I mean, I feel like Force of Will is more likely to be reprinted. And I know that sounds kind of weird, but I mean, you look at Dark Confidant. It's been reprinted, what, 3 times now, and it's been judge foiled. Force of Will has not. Like, there's just multiple things that you have to kind of look at as factors, and I think that the safer bet right now, honestly, is to get in on, you know, the Dark Confidants that I think they've already seen what their bottom's going to be, and they went up for Modern Masters, meaning there's a high demand for them. And the fact that, you know, Force of Will, it has been not necessarily decreasing, but not necessarily increasing either. Like, it's just kind of staying stagnant, and they're kind of hard to trade out or at least get any premium on, I've found lately. So, I don't know. In this case, I think I'm all about snagging the Dark Confidants.
A playset of forces is probably better than a playset of Dark Confidants, but if you're talking singletons, that's a factor you gotta consider.
Yeah, because, I mean, they're both kind of all or nothing cards, but Force of Will especially is usually a 4 or a 0.
Yeah,
I think my take on it is, I just think there's more momentum, and I think that's the right word for it. There's more momentum for Modern right now than Legacy, and Dark Confidant will trade to both a Modern and a Legacy player, and that Force of Will is only going to a Legacy player. So I think I'd rather have the Dark Confidant.
Yeah, there's definitely more liquidity to the Confidant. And I factored that in, but there is a wow factor to Force of Will too. Still, yeah. It is pseudo power.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, to get Force of Will, you know, you kind of have to like do something. Whereas like Modern Masters, oh, maybe you just pulled one in a pack and got lucky and here it is.
Okay, well, differing opinions. That's not surprising necessarily. It just really depends on your goals, I think.
I agree.
Yeah, let's move on to the next letter. So, we have two sides here. We got one person with an overgrown tomb from Return to Ravnica, two promo Emrakuls, two foil promo Lingering Souls, and two Dissension Spheres. Guy B has one Dami Raid, three M14 Mutavolts, and one Batterskull. And this letter came from before the Pro Tour, so this is before the spike. Which one would you go for?
I think at that time, and I think still now probably, you're going to want Pile B. I think Domri Raid at the time had a lot of upward mobility. I think M14 Mutavault is probably at its floor right now. I think, you know, the Redemption is slowed down a little bit. Nobody's really opening M14 packs right now. I think Mutavault's about the cheapest it's ever going to be. And that's a multi-format all-star. And Batterskull, same deal. It's a legacy playable card. I feel like they're never making more Batterskulls because that was a mistake to make it in the first place. So those cards are only going up. The rest of them, like the Lingering Souls, you know, they're fine. D-Sphere could go up, but I don't like Shocklands, and I think the promo Emrakuls are gonna fall off a little bit because it's not playable in EDH, and like when people stop playing Sneak and Show as much as they do in Legacy, I think those are gonna fall off a little bit.
What about you, Ryan?
I mean, I kind of have to agree with Jason here. I think Pile B, well, A, for me, I can sell Pile B probably quite a bit easier than I can Pile A. Just because things like Detention Sphere and those promo Lingering Souls are kind of aids on TCG player. But, yeah, I mean, just looking for pure value-wise and long-term, I think Pile B looks better to me anyway. I don't know. The Emrakuls, I think, hit their big spike, and they still see a lot of play and stuff, but they're not, I don't know, they're just, I can't see them being worth what they are now going up any from where they are now for quite a while.
Yeah, I would agree too. I mean, even before the Mutavolts, they're not going to be reprinted and Batterskull is so good. Actually, I'm not saying anything new to this conversation, so I'm going to cut that.
So, Corbin, what do you think? Did you want the Overgrown Tomb, Emrakul, blah, blah, blah side of that trade, or did you want the Domri Raid Mutavolt side?
Well, it kind of depends on if you are, like, the Emrakuls, for instance, are a very, very popular casual card. So, like, in my store where I sell a lot of that kind of stuff, more so than, like, standard staples, I want that pile. If you're going to a PTQ, I think you want the standard stuff. And obviously, Domri is, you know, a really good card, and the Mutavolts are on their way up right now. So, I think I would rather have the second pile, just because of the upward movement recently on the Mutavolts and Domri.
Well, I think that's about all for trades tonight. Keep sending those in, and we'll keep evaluating them and telling you which side that we would like to be on. Make sure you don't tell us which side you were on, so that doesn't bias our opinion. Because I'm going to be inclined to say, you're wrong! Okay, so we have a letter here from a listener named Bernie. It says, I'm tired of hearing you guys say you get no feedback, so here it is. Your podcast fucking rocks. It is always entertaining and informative. You don't tell Corbin to shut up as much as you should. Okay, we're sorry for that, Bernie. My suggestion is I play Modern a lot these days and have made a lot speculating on it. It's crazy the amount of cards that are shooting up daily in price. This seems to be a good area with lots of room to make money before Modern gets huge. I'd love to hear more Modern talk. Do we have a defense for our lack of Modern talk, guys?
I don't play it enough, so I'm not in it.
It's not really Modern season right now.
It's coming up. Right? Is that, when is it? It's coming for the Anger of Gods?
It's next summer.
Oh, summer?
Yeah, they changed it from the winter to the summer. So, I mean, I think the time to actually make money on Modern cards is, you know, maybe not right now, although now is certainly fine, but in a couple months, you know, people will still be a little ways out and you'll start to see some prices creep down and stuff. And I mean, really, it's just the off season is time to pick up modern cards because they're going to go back up. Like all the staples, whatever price they are now, probably less than those staples are going to be worth come modern season.
That is a guarantee.
So this actually gives us a chance to talk about something that I wanted to bring up. And people are saying now is the time to buy Thoughtseize. I actually don't agree. I think we wait till redemption because then we'll be at peak supply. And the longer you can hold off on buying Thoughtseize, I think the cheaper they're going to be.
I think you got to like mid-December around there.
Yeah, I mean, I mean they're going to be drafted. I mean, they're going to be drafted for forever. Like, I mean, this is not any special sort of set. They will be Theros drafted for the next 9 months or whatever.
Yeah, and it's a small set, so there's going to be two more packs for the next and then one. So you're not going to have any of this crazy Return to Ravnica stuff that happened.
Yeah, like, I mean, Theros is just going to get opened a lot.
Yeah, so I think you wait till we have a little bit more supply. So you look what happens at redemption. If the price does not go down at all, you didn't lose anything by waiting. But if the price does go down, then you didn't spend extra money.
How much is the paper right now?
$20.
Oh, damn. Okay. Yeah, you could get it for like $8 buying it.
I mean, this is
$9.
Probably a 12-ish dollar card. 12 plus or minus $2. I feel very confident saying that. That's where that's going to end up. $12 plus or minus 2.
Yeah, I mean, I put it at 15, but I think we all agree it's in a month from now. It's probably not 20, 2 months from now. Okay, so let's jump into the next one here from Chad Tompkins. Chad says, "Hey, guys, I've been listening to the show for a while and love it. I've just recently started getting involved in Twitter and have talked to you guys a few times on there. I've been playing Magic for 12 years and Magic Online for 9. Most of my time playing competitive paper Magic came to an end when I joined the Marine Corps due to deployments and training exercises I have to do all the time. His question to us is, if someone is just starting to get into the financial aspect of the game, how would you advise doing it and how could they set themselves up for success? Marcel, I guess you talked to Chad at an event not very long ago and you told him to set up an Excel spreadsheet to keep track of your transactions. He says, maybe if you could go over, if you had $20, $50, or $100 to invest, where you would start with each. This might help people who are just getting into it or back into the game. Someone who already has cards but their money's all tied up in their decks. Or someone like myself who unfortunately had to sell their collection and is starting over. Thanks a bunch and keep up the awesome work. Semper Fi." So I guess kind of to distill this here, what is our advice to someone who's getting into the game and has a limited budget, whether that be $20, $50, or $100 or, you know, whatever it is?
I think if you have $20 or $50, you bank that till you have $100.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You gotta save up some money and be willing to ride it out of some, because if you're really trying to, it's hard to have this make you money and then really ride on your specs, because sometimes you're just going to be constantly checking it and certain specs you're just going to have to wait on them. And unless you, you know, have a store and you have ways of just striking outs and getting rid of cards, it's harder for you to just put money into stuff and get what you think you're going to get out of it quickly. It's more of a long term.
$100 is a good minimum investment, because at that point you're buying a reasonable collection, or you're buying a box. And, you know, like going from a box to, you know, a case in 3 months is not unreasonable. Just trading and using the cards for speculation and stuff like that. So I would say you want about $100 as a minimum investment.
So what do you think if you're just like brand new to the financial side of the game, where do you think they should park that? Should you buy a box? Should you try to make individual specs or what?
Not a box. A box is, I think, the worst thing you could do.
I don't know if it's the worst thing you could do. Like all my Theros boxes, if I had held on to that stuff, a lot of it would have gone up, which I didn't really see happening. But that just gives you a trade binder, essentially. Like,
right.
If when the set comes right out, if you bought a box and threw it in a binder, you're good to go. You're gonna put that down and people are gonna find stuff. So,
I see.
I wouldn't buy a box of M14 right now. But when Journey into Nyx or Born of the Gods comes around, if you spent $100 on a box and put that all into a binder, that's not a bad way to start out. It's one option.
I see. Is it better than just buying cards that you think that people will want? Like back when Return of Ravnica, like buying a bunch of, you know, the sliders and those detention spheres and such cards.
Well, if you bought 12 Angel of Serenity at $8 each and then waited for them to be 25, that would have been pretty good. So that's a...
Right. I mean, like, if you're just trying to get a trade binder going, like, opening the box is fine because then you have those lower-end cards, too. You know, just buying the big stuff is great. And And that's one way to go about it if you're able to crunch those down into two. But like at some point, you just have to have cards in your trade binder for people to find. If that's what you're trying to do, you know, if you're trying to get into trading, if you're just trying to spec, well, then maybe you know, and you have $100, you set aside a third of it for this spec, a third of it for this spec, so on and so forth, and just kind of start from there and build it from there. So it just kind of depends on what you want to do with your magic finance, what your goals are.
And what do you feel about expensive specs? Do you think that's a good thing for someone to start off with, or?
Do a third.
Yeah, bet on the small stuff. Like, if you have $100, say I'm going to put $33 onto a spec, and find a spec that you can do for that. And it's probably better to get a bunch of $2 cards you think might go to 4 or 5 than it is to get a $25 card you think will go to 30.
What about the $25 cards that you think might go to 40 or 50? Do you think that's still gaining more money?
I mean, yes. The problem is, like, if it misses, it has farther to fall than this small stuff does.
Yeah, I think, honestly, if you're going to aim for that kind of stuff, you should, you know, start off with, like, one card that you're pretty sure is going to go up. That way, worst case scenario, you're not losing a ton if you're only investing, like, $100. And at the same time, you can kind of see, like, okay, it went up this much, but was it even worth it for me to pick it up in the beginning?
And you should spread it out over long-term and short-term specs, too.
Keeping a spreadsheet, like, you know, Marcel suggested when he talked to you, I guess, is a great idea because it allows you to keep track and see exactly where your finances go. And it's also a good way if you track your trades. Just take a picture with your phone of the trades and keep a spreadsheet of them and see how, you know, you look back in a few months and see how you've done trading.
Yep. Keep your numbers because you never know what you got until you write it down and figure out exactly what you're doing, if you're breaking even or not.
I would advise spreading my money out over short-term and long-term specs if I'm starting out too. I would probably put 25% or less in long-term stuff because you don't want to be turning it over. So do mostly short-term stuff, but you can spread that out over like bulk rares and big stuff. But I wouldn't put all my eggs in one basket, especially if I'm only investing $100.
Well, there you go. Good advice. Jump in the game. Build your collection. Get your trade binder going so you can keep it going. Let's read the next letter. So we got, hi there, guys. Just started listening to the podcast, and I have to say, the cliche response, that I'm really enjoying it. I work quite early in the mornings, and listening to your podcast helps the day go by a little quicker. All that aside, here's my question. I've been playing since last July, and I have a collection, and I've collected a good amount of cards. I recently sold a few cards that I had, 4 or 5, Sublime Archangels, Cliff, Top Retreat, etc., via eBay. I'm not looking to make a profit, but to have the hobby at this point pay for itself, or at least mitigate some of the costs. Do you think eBay is a good medium for this? Buying and selling a few singles here and there, or are buy lists more appropriate? The shipping cost at times seems to be really an issue, and I was just curious. Pardon my rambling. I hope you guys can help. Love the podcast. Have a good one, Mark. So Jason, you're the big eBay guy, so what's your experience?
eBay is something I've gotten away from because their new picture policy requires you to take a physical picture of each listing. And they were actually, if they didn't like the picture you used, they were closing down people's auctions. It sounds like he doesn't really want to go deep on either TCG Player or eBay. I can't say I advocate that as an out. When I was with eBay, my fees were much lower than TCG Player because I was an eBay store, which required it was like 50 or 100 bucks a month, depending on the tier. But what you got for that was a bunch of free listings and stuff like that and lower fees. And when you got hundreds, you know, upon thousands of sales, your fees started to go down. So that was something that really I had to invest a lot of time and a lot of cards into making a worthwhile endeavor. If you're just selling a few cards on eBay or TCG Player, a lot of times it's tough to do better than buy list. So, if it's something you're not super serious about, I can't really recommend that as an out. And I honestly might just trade some of those cards into cards that have a better buy list, like a lower spread, and just buy list that stuff as an out. You'll do about 70% of what you were doing, you know, selling at retail. But then without the fees there, you're going to come really close. So you got to go real deep on eBay or TCG Player for it to be worth it.
Plus, like, buy lists save your time. And I think, like, you can go to an event, for instance, or just to your local store, sit down with it, be done with it in half an hour. You do all this stuff on eBay. You're making trips to the post office. You're making several trips to the post office a week. Like, a lot of times you just put a lot more time into it than you realize. And that's another reason why buy lists can be easier. Like, it's one trip to the post office. It's one package. So I know you didn't think we were going to read that since, it, you know, you sent that to us in April and we just now got to it. But 6 months later, here we are.
Yeah, by now he's got like 1,000 eBay sales. He's like, thanks a lot, assholes.
Hey, didn't someone on Twitter had a buy list that they got stolen, but then they got paid out? What happened with that, Ryan? Did you?
Oh, that was Dave Wasser, right? He said the store like just never paid him.
Yeah, it's MTG Fanatic. Like, I'm more than willing to say that one on the cast because, frankly, that website, I've had issues with them before. I personally advocate not selling things to them. Every time I've heard someone talk about a store where they didn't get paid for 3 or 4 months, or not every time, excuse me, but most of the time, it is that store.
Yeah, I was going to say, there was a store that didn't pay me on time, and it was not MTG Fanatic.
Yeah, but I think, honestly, their business model is just get your cards, hope to sell them in time to pay you for them.
It's a pyramid scheme, is what you're saying.
Basically, and they got all the decks in their hand.
I mean, that's just the way it feels. I mean, I'm not trying to slander anybody. I just have never heard good things about them and personally will not sell to them. So take that as you will.
All right. Okay. Sorry for the downer. Let's pick it back up.
I've got one here. And there's another one. We're going back in the vault here to get from Brent Gilmore. Says, guys, great podcast, entertaining and informative. I found the mailbag episode to be surprisingly insightful, answering questions I didn't realize I had, which is interesting because this is, the last time we did a mailbag episode must have been 6 months ago. Sorry guys, we'll try not to wait 6 months this time. He says, I don't have any questions, but I have two quick comments. I wanted to write this email. The episode was wrapping up. You guys were encouraging people to write in, and I don't believe you actually said what the email address is. So we should tell people that.
Also, he found it.
Number two, I love Corbin's sports take. I nominate that you include Corbin's NBA Minute in all podcasts for the duration of the NBA playoffs. Keep up the great work, by Brent.
I think you added that part.
No, I didn't. I swear it's there. It's making a comeback.
Maybe I erased that part. I don't remember.
It's making a comeback next NBA season. Corbin's NBA Minute.
That is not going to be a thing. That will be your last episode.
It's going to happen. Anyways, so to actually answer the question Brent had, for everyone out there who wants to send stuff in, what is the email address they should send questions to?
Brainstormbrew@gmail.com.
We will include it in the show notes. So if you are on MTGcast or Gathering Magic, you can find it in the literature we provide along with every episode.
And so we have another announcement for contest that we got going on.
Yeah, Jason, you want to take that?
We want your guys' help data mining. What we have decided to do was to begin kind of tracking our picks of the week a little bit more to kind of say, all right, instead of, you know, telling the people to pick up a card and then just forgetting about it completely and then they don't know when to sell it or just having really bad picks of the week and not being accountable for it, what we've decided to do is track that on our website, brainstormbrewery.com. So what we need from people is just to listen to some of our old episodes, write down what our picks of the week were, and give us that information. So what we've decided to do was have everybody who is interested in helping out send us an email, and we'll assign you an episode or two to listen to, so we don't have any redundancy in there. What you will do by participating is enter yourself into a drawing. We're going to be giving away some Brainstorm Brewery prizes, like I think a playmat and maybe some other merchandise, and everybody's going to get one of our elemental stag tokens just for participating. So if you're interested, email us at brainstormbrew@gmail.com and enter yourself in the contest.
Yes, help us make the cast a better cast and get yourself some free stuff. You like free stuff, right? So just do it. Like
free stuff is value. If you're listening to a finance podcast, you are all about value.
They say there's no free lunch. Well, yeah, you got to do a little bit of work. So, but you still get your stuff.
Yeah, but the work is listening to our podcast, and you do that anyway.
Yeah, but our older ones were painful. I understand.
Yeah, Corbin did that NBA minute, for example.
Ah, tuned out. We'd have pick of the weeks before that anyways.
Yeah, it didn't start up to, like, what, 30? I got it written down somewhere. I did, like, the early picks of the week, I think. So, check that out. So, we want to say goodbye. This was an episode that wasn't supposed to make it.
But only people knew how complex this episode has been. Let's just say it spanned 2 days and multiple disconnections.
several. You know what? It's probably better because of the multiple takes, right? We didn't stumble over ourselves quite as badly.
Yeah, but Marcel gets to have fun piecing it all together.
Yeah, and we missed the best part. Corbett really put his foot in his mouth.
We'll release this information at some point, but probably not until Corbin pisses us off.
We'll have a Kickstarter. That'll be our stretch goal. If we get 100,000.
Stretch goal is to reveal what Corbin said. All right, guys. So just as we're signing off here, a final thought. We are still looking for some talented writers to contribute to brainstormbrewery.com. We actually have a lot of fan-generated articles on the website right now, and a lot of them are pretty good. I've been really pleased with the quality of the fan submissions. So if you are interested in being a writer on our site and you have a finance or non-finance article series that you've been toying with, why don't you go ahead and send us that email. Again, it's brainstormbrew@gmail.com, and contact us about contributing to the site. We'd love to have you write for us.
And even if you don't consider yourself a talented writer, but you have something you want to say, do not be scared. Like, this is... You know, this is open to anybody. All of us here got our starts just basically contacting a random site and saying, hey, can I write? We don't really know what I'm doing, but can I try? So, like, don't be afraid. If you want to write something, you know, just let us know and we can make it happen.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.
The other side, there's a Dahmer.
Hello?
Hello?
Corbin.
You just shitted on yourself.
Great.
What if he knows we can't hear him?
The binder twine snapped.
Who do I have to blow to get a podcast recorded this week?
Great question.